So what we thought we would do, if it's okay with you, we was going to go through your website, Proof That God Exists, or actually introduce stuff a little bit first. So go into like the starting of the website and talking, because obviously people will be listening to this. I'll be sharing this with a few people who have not heard of you before. So if you want to go to a little introduction, and then we'll start going through the website.
Pretty simple. My name is Cy Tim Rugenkate. I'm a Canadian, and my website is proofthatgodexists.org, where I offer a logical proof for the existence of God. But the most of the Christians that you'll run into will be of the evidentialist stripe, and they will try to prove that God exists to people using evidences. And I say that's contrary to what Scripture teaches. Scripture teaches that everybody already knows that God exists. So rather than prove to them that God exists with evidence, I expose the fact that they do know that God exists.
Okay, and say this is something that is, say, written in the Bible as well.
That's right.
Okay, so you have your basis for this, and I can see where you're coming from with that point. So if we go to the website, the very front page is a question of belief. So what do you believe? And you've got your four options here. I suppose we'll just go through. What we'd do is go through, find the ones where we agree on. If there's any we disagree on, note that we disagree on them, go through the website, and then we'll go back and start way through the disagreements if you wanted, or.
The thing is, this is going to be different than a standard debate, because what I normally do in my debates is I challenge the person's epistemology. Because in order to even examine the website at all, you have to have a foundation for knowledge, for truth, and for logic. But since in your earlier messages, you said to me that you wanted to go through the website as if you were going through it, just as any atheist coming to the site, I'd be happy to do that. But the whole point of the website is that if you get stuck on a question, you can't go past that. See, that's the point, because it's no use discussing something further on in the website when the step prior to that is essential to even get there. But I mean, we'll just see how it goes, and we'll just take it from there.
I think the benefit of going through the whole thing is so that anyone listening to this who has not experienced this, they understand what each of the steps are,
Yeah,
and
we'll
then
see how it
we'll go.
goes.
Okay, so what do you believe absolute truth exists? I'm pretty sure all three of us are in agreement on that one. Okay, right, that's pretty conclusive. Next is go to step one, which I thought that was step one, but
Well, that's
irrelevant.
just a welcome to the website. And the interesting thing that I don't really talk about on the site, and I'm actually working on avenues to make that more clear, is that once you admit that absolute truth exists, you expose that you know that God exists, because absolute truth can't be made sense of without God. But let's just go to the next step then.
So what do you believe? Laws of logic exist, laws of logic do not exist. Andy and I are in the camp of laws of logic do exist.
And to clarify, laws of logic, would you say, Sai, are descriptions of the way the universe or existence behaves?
No.
No? What are
Nope.
laws of logic?
I would say that laws of logic are a reflection of the thinking of God. That they
Sure.
are. However, the thing is, I'm not too concerned about it at that point. I'm just, if the atheist, if the unbeliever wants to say that laws of logic exist, we're going to get into the constituents of those laws later on in the site. But just denial of them, if you deny them, there's no point in continuing. So the fact that you acknowledge that they exist, we'll get into what they actually are as we go on.
Okay, I would say that's fair. Laws of mathematics exist. In a way, I would consider mathematics a form of logic. It to me almost feels like the same question.
I was going to take that step out actually, but I know that people have particularly liked that one for the example when people deny laws of mathematics. But I agree, they're based on mathematical and logical laws are basically the same, so I agree
Okay.
with that.
Although this is slightly tangential, I'm curious as to how anyone would argue there's no laws of mathematics, but there are laws of logic.
Oh well, you'd be surprised the emails
Okay, well, that might be a
I get.
separate discussion another day
Yeah, no, it's
for.
just the thing is, the emails that I get, if I say black, somebody will say white. So it doesn't really matter. It's just those who are a little more open, they will not see a difference there. But those who just want to argue with me, they're going to argue with everything that I say. So.
Okay. Well, we'll go ahead with laws of mathematics existing. Laws of science existing, I would say, given the examples you've written up, say, usually expressed in mathematical equations, an example of law of the science is the law of gravity. Using that, we can predict how fast a heavier than air object will fall to the ground given all factors for the equation. So, Yeah, I would agree with that. And I think Andy does as well.
Absolutely.
Okay, I don't want to assume. we'll get into that later. I could tell Si's getting ready for that one. Yeah. okay, step four. Now, I think this is where we have...
A bit of a disagreement.
Yeah, most people do. Actually, this is another step that I was thinking of taking out because so many people get hung up on it. And this is where I get the majority of my emails. So I was telling my friends, you know, I'm just going to take this step out because it's too much of a hassle. It's not necessary. But people say, well, the consequences of denying absolute morals, I think that you should leave people with that. So I decide to leave it in.
Okay. You would say absolute moral laws exist where... What would be your justification for saying there is absolute moral laws? Just
based on God's revelation, based on the character of God.
Based on the character. But from now, this might be to do with the way it's being defined, the way you're using the definition of absolute. But if it's more or less contingent upon God, if there was no God, there, in your opinion, there would be no absolute moral laws. Would that
be correct? I'm saying that's an impossible hypothetical. But let me give you an example.
Okay.
When God says, thou shalt not steal... It's not because he's decided that stealing is wrong. It's not that he has a standard that he says, well, stealing is wrong, so I'm going to say it's wrong. That's not the reason stealing is wrong. The reason that stealing is absolutely morally wrong is because God is not a thief, and we are created in his image. So we're not to steal because we're put on this earth to represent God. And that's why it's an absolute moral law.
See, the way I would see it is it almost seems that these things are contingent. It's because God is the way God is.
Well, that's right. They're contingent on his character. You're absolutely right.
But would that not
mean it... God can only be the way that he is.
Definitively, would that not mean it is subject to God? Subjective?
Well, it is based
on
his absolute objective character. It's not subjective because God is absolute. But anyhow, at this point, all you're doing is agreeing or disagreeing with them. I mean, I think you understand what they mean.
Okay, yeah. I think I was just trying to work out the semantics between, you know, of if it's contingent on something, the...
Well, it's absolutely dependent on the character and nature of God, which is unchanging.
Okay. All right, well, I guess Andy and I would have a slightly different view on that, given our worldview.
Right.
We would say morality is subjective. It's dependent upon... Everyone has their own idea of what's morally right and morally wrong.
Right.
And I can give a very sort of simple analogy where someone would ask you, should you say to that person they look fat when they wear those jeans? Like a very, very simple, very easy question. And some people would say, yes, you should. They might have reasons why. Some people would say, no, that's immoral. Some people say, you know, being honesty is the more moral. So we have a difference there. Although you throw up a different example. If I go and click absolute moral laws do not exist.
Right.
We go for a more touchy subject, and I appreciate that because obviously to explore these questions properly, you do have to go to the extreme ends to see how they hold.
Right. Well, what I'm not saying is that we know the absolute moral about every circumstance, like whether you should tell your wife she looks fat in that dress. I'm not saying that we know the absolute moral of each circumstance, but I'm saying the question I'm asking is, do absolute moral laws exist? And in order to have that question answered, I go to an extreme, disgusting case to see where people stand on that. So you're right. I do go to an extreme.
Okay. And I don't have any issue with that, personally. I think it can be very effective for, you know, conveying a point.
The thing is, one thing I'd like to add, too, is one of the things I say is molesting children for fun. Now, I would say that molesting children under any circumstances is absolutely morally wrong. But the reason that I add that is because you would be surprised at the emails I get. You know, what if somebody was going to kill a million people unless you molested that person? Would it be wrong? I would say, yes, it would still be wrong. However, I just want to prevent getting all of those emails. I still get them, mind you. You know, they try and twist it. But I say for fun, just to put, you know, to show that there is an absolute moral standard and to see, you know, what people's position is on that.
Okay. I'll give what I would... try and describe my position on this and see if Andy would agree with me or if he wants to add or say something slightly different on this. For me, when I look at the subject of morality, I'll take this example of molesting children for fun. I would sort of say, okay, why is it wrong? What is the attribute of this act that we are observing and saying that part is wrong. And as far as I'm concerned, it comes down to a negative correlation, like a negative experiential correlation, something that some negative experience
negative
that a negative effect. Now, I think I'm talking from the perspective of consciousness here.
Yeah, but negative effect is begging the question, of course.
Well, I don't really see how it is, if you mind me stepping in here.
No problem.
molesting children for fun, while most people, 95% of all people, would agree this is abhorrent, should never be done, we should condemn anyone who considers it, it's not absolutely morally wrong just because it is, or just because it's a reflection of God in your position. It's morally wrong because of the effect. And I know you said it's begging the question, but I don't think it is. At least from our perspective,
right,
when we decide if something is right or wrong, it's because of an effect. If, for instance, molesting children for fun did not result in psychological damage, did not result in physical damage, did not result in any sort of negative effect, it would not be morally wrong. But it does.
But what I'm saying, sorry, Andy, sorry for jumping in, but what I'm saying is that you're calling that a negative effect. You're moving the goalposts. I could say, why is that negative? That could be the very effect that the molester wants to achieve.
But it's negative for the person experiencing it. You see, it doesn't matter what the molester is trying to achieve. The point is that the person they're inflicting this upon is experiencing a negative effect.
Well,
they
again,
are being harmed.
Sorry, Andy, but again, that's begging the question. They might find it to be negative, but the thing is, that's begging the question that that is actually negative. They might not like it. All you're saying is that they don't like it. You're saying they don't like being molested, but you can't say it's wrong. You can't say it's a negative effect. They don't like it. Big deal.
So maybe it's a definition problem, but if I were to define negativity as harm...
Yeah, but harm is also begging the question.
How?
How do you define what's harm? What's harm to you might be not harm to me.
And that's where it would come in. If we were to do an action that's not harmful to you, then it wouldn't be immoral, at least if we're only looking at it from the harm point of view.
No, but what is harm, though?
Harm is something where there's a negative experience which
You know, we could even take this a little bit further. Let's say that we defined it as a negative experience. You still can't tell me why we can't cause negative experiences on other people. Why is that wrong? Why can't I get my jollies doing that and saying, well, that's right because I happen to be the most powerful. And what makes me happy is causing other people's negative effects and causing them harm. So even if you could define it, you still can't tell me why it's wrong.
Well, it's wrong for us because we would say that it is wrong to harm people in this way because this is not the way we want to be treated.
Yeah,
and it's in this essence that we see morality as being subjective.
But the problem with that is... when you say it's wrong for us, somebody could have the exact opposite opinion about the exact same thing, and you have no basis for differentiating them. Because you might say it's wrong for you, and I could say, well, it's right for me.
And I would say that it would be the idea of having like an absolute moral system, and if everyone agreed upon it, would be nice, because it would help getting along better. But the fact that I see that isn't there.
Yeah, but you're confusing behavior with standard. Because, you know, I could say it'd be very nice if everybody did the speed limit. Doesn't mean there's no speed limit.
But the speed limit was put there by...
It's not a perfect analogy, but let's say there was an absolute speed limit. Doesn't mean all people are going to adhere to it. It would be nice if they did. But that question has nothing to do with whether or not there's an absolute speed limit.
Okay. I don't know how you're feeling about this, Andy. I feel like we may have to sort of come back to this one if we want to go through some of the other points, and then we'll just get into general conversation of the whole issue, or if you had something you wanted to...
I don't know. I had a few thoughts. The first was, even if we all define harm and negative effect differently, right? Let's have a hypothetical where... every person on Earth has no interaction with each other. I know that sounds absurd, but let's think that's true. Upon interacting with somebody else, whatever each individual person construes as a negative, like, intrusion upon them is harmful, okay? which means that it is subjective to think what's harmful, but the fact that they do think that that is harmful to them makes it so. So, like, yes, some people may think it's not harmful to rape or murder or whatever, but the people they're raping and murdering do. And that's the standard. The standard is that you are intruding upon them.
Yeah, but what makes it wrong to violate that standard?
Well, there is no absolute objective reason.
I think it's in the same sense, there's no absolute wrong from this perspective. If one country decides to go to war with another country and kill a bunch of other people, they don't care about the people in their country. But generally, because the people of a country want to stay safe, we try and avoid war because we understand that the things that we didn't want that thing to come onto ourselves. I know if I be mean to someone else, it's more likely they're going to be mean towards me. And so it's kind of a... I'm trying to find a better phrase of mutual deterrent.
Right. The thing is, though,
mutually insured destruction.
Morality is defined as an ought. You cannot get an ought without God.
Well, we're saying...
All you can get is an is. All you can get is an is. You can say, well, this causes harm. This causes destruction. Who cares? Why ought you not do that? That's the question. That's what morality is.
Here's the answer, though. And you say it's begging the question, but oughts, of course, have conditions. Your condition is you ought not do it because it's either because God says it or because it's a reflection of God, right?
It's based on his character, that's right.
Sure. And you ought not do it for that reason. From our perspective, you ought not do this because it is not in everyone's best interest.
But that's arbitrary.
It is arbitrary, but that's
so
the point.
So yours.
No. Well, you have to admit that if God exists, if he's all-powerful, he's all-knowing, and he has an unchanging character, that I have a standard for absolute morality. You might disagree with it, but to deny it doesn't really make sense.
Well, that sounds more like you have an authority in which it comes from, the same sense that in a country, you have whoever the prime minister, in my opinion, or president is of the country. They may give laws, and that might be your standard for something. But now, it's not a perfect analogy because it's another man, which you would say is fallible.
Right, it's an arbitrary because the next country could think something different, and everybody in that country could disagree with the fellow. So it's completely arbitrary. You cannot have morality because morality is an ought. And now you can say, well, because, you know, I like it. That's not an ought. And the thing is, and you know, you can take that a step further. You can go to evolutionary principles. Evolution can only tell you, if it were true, it can only tell you what is the case. It cannot tell you what ought to be the case. Now, because what you come up with is a pragmatic answer. That we do this for survival, we do this for happiness, we do this. But the problem with pragmatism is pragmatism cannot give you the proper goal. Because if I said to you the proper goal was to serve God, then you would have to develop your morality around that. But if you say the proper goal is for happiness, well, then your morality would develop around that. But I'm saying that if you develop your morality around arbitrary standards, you don't get morality. You get moral preferences. And if morality can be stipulated, anybody can stipulate their own.
Yeah, and to be honest, I agree with that. I just don't see that as necessarily as an issue.
Well, that's because, fine. Then we can just keep going in the site, and you can answer the question how you would answer it.
Okay.
And we'll see what happens.
I feel this is a little semantic trick here. If it says, catch the words. Molesting children for fun is not absolutely morally wrong. Now, if I click that, it will load up. If you truly believe that there is no such thing as absolute morality, then there would be no right or wrong. Now, I think that is worded incorrectly there. I think it should be worded, and you might see where I'm getting at when I reword it. If you truly believed that there was no such thing as absolute morality, then there would be no absolute right or absolute wrong.
Well, what's the difference? You can't have a degree of right. It's either right or wrong.
You can have right or wrong dependent upon a standard.
Right.
It's conditional.
Yeah, that's right. And since you have no standard, you can't have right or wrong.
We do have a standard. The standard is harm.
No, well, that's an arbitrary standard. That's the point.
It is an arbitrary standard, but that's not a problem.
Here's where I think maybe you could explain it in a way that we might see this better, perhaps. We see, yes, it's an arbitrary standard based upon what we decide is moral and whatnot.
Right.
But we see yours as being arbitrary as well, because it's arbitrary based on God, and God is the way God is, just because God is that way. God,
well, he can't be any other way. So, I mean, we disagree with that, but it's not arbitrary.
You're saying God cannot be any other way.
Right.
that would render God arbitrary. It just is. God is just the way God is, for no reason, for no cause. There's nothing before God. So in what sense, I think we're failing to understand in what sense yours is not arbitrary.
Because it can't change, and it's not based on opinion. It's not based on anybody's whim. It's based on the character of an unchanging God. But let me get back to the question you were talking about. You know, if you don't have a right or wrong, then you can't have a standard. Well, let me, if I say 2 + 2 = 4.
Okay.
Now, if somebody says 2 + 2 = 5, I can say that's wrong because I know that the answer is 4. But you can't say that 5 is wrong if you don't have a standard. And that's what I'm saying. You can say, well, according to my standard, the right answer is 3. So that's why I can say 5 is wrong.
But now, I think I know what your objection to this is going to be, but I'm going to go ahead this anyway because I'm going to use this. If I would say, okay, if God changed or God was not God anymore, then this standard would be gone, right? But you, of course, your answer is God is unchanging.
Well, it's an impossible hypothetical, yeah.
Right. Why is it an impossible hypothetical? Because God is defined as being as such?
No, because he's revealed that he cannot change, that is his character, that's his nature.
Revealed how? Because any method of revealing through God is being experienced by us, and we are fallible beings.
Well, if you want to depart from the website and start debating on our epistemology, I'd be happy to do that.
Okay, I think maybe we should save that. I think we should get through the site and then go on to that, and we'll just see where that takes us from there, if you're happy to do so.
Yeah, that's fine.
Yeah? Andy, are you happy with that?
Yeah.
Okay, so that we can get into more steps and people like listening to this, you might be kicking, screaming already. We'll go into some more points. I will try and make this as user-friendly as I can for people listening who may not be aware of some of the arguments. Oh, I think your website does do that relatively well. So absolute moral laws exist. We'll go with that just so we can move on. I think we're getting to some points that we agree on. Laws of logic, mathematics, science, and, well, you've got absolute morality in everywhere, are immaterial.
Which we've conceded to be true, simply for continuation.
For argument's sake.
And like I say, normally I would not continue, but since, you know, you're doing this for a broader audience, that would be fine. Because once you don't get to a certain point, I want people to dwell on the fact that they've denied absolute morals, and they can go to Disney if they want, you know, in the meantime. You know, and as, I think if you've noticed that if you click exit at any time in the site, it does take you to Disneyland.
It does, actually. I was wondering what
The funny thing is that mostly I get Christians upset with me for this. They say that it's not funny, but I think it's actually a biblical principle because the Apostle Paul said, basically, if what we believe is not true, you might as well eat and drink for tomorrow we die. And I think if Disney was around back then, he might have said, you might as well go to Disney for tomorrow we die. And it's the unbelievers, the atheists, that actually get a chuckle out of it. They send me an email, they think it's funny, and then they go back to the site. But I get Christians that get mad at me for that.
Well, that's a shame, because I appreciate humor. But,
so do I.
So, laws of logic, mathematics, and so on, are immaterial, I would agree. I don't see how they're some sort of physical thing.
Right. They are, well, at least for laws of mathematics, science, logic, etc., those are descriptions, which are obviously not physical.
Yeah.
And morality is prescriptive, as you would say, Sai. So, right. Yes, immaterial.
But I would actually raise some objections to that, too, because, for instance, the laws of logic that says A cannot be both A and not A at the same time and in the same way, that's a prescription. But like I say, that's just another...
Actually, this is something Andy and I were talking about earlier. I guess we would look at logic and we would say logic is both... Or I've said this. Andy maybe had some issues with it because he feels it's a bit semantic-y, if that's even a word. But... basically, logic is both prescriptive and descriptive. It's descriptive of the universe, but also the laws, the written laws, how they're sort of put down on paper, are prescriptive to us to help us govern our thinking.
The problem is if they're descriptive, they become contingent. They become contingent to that which was described. You cannot say A cannot be both A and not A at the same time in the same way. All you could say is that A was not both A and not A at the same time in the same way. But nobody uses logic that way. So they use it prescriptively.
And well, you see, the way that we came up with these logical laws is through observation.
I would actually disagree with that, because you cannot observe an instance of a law of logic.
Except that's exactly what we did. You see, the law of non-contradiction, for instance, we've never once observed something being itself and not itself in the same time, in the same way. We've never, I can't think of another instance, but the point is that these are observations. And so technically, theoretically, something could randomly happen.
Well, let
and
me
it would
clarify.
Be-
sorry,
I actually understand Sai's point here.
Yeah, you cannot observe a universal. Let's put it that way. That's more accurate.
Our observations. Yeah, we cannot observe it absolutely because we have a finite amount of time. We do not, you know, we're not infinite to see everything, the full scale of reality and existence, to know that something could never change. We just never have observed certain things to change or logic laws to.
Very limited scope of experience.
Granted, but it's still, all of these laws are an assumption that the universe behaves this way universally. It is an assumption.
Right, and you know what an assumption is?
I would say necessary, but...
yeah, but the definition of an assumption.
Something you're believing without reason, more or less?
It's a proposition accepted without proof or evidence.
Right.
It's the basis for some other conclusion. And, you know, that's fine. If you want to admit that you live on blind faith, I have no problem with that. That's my claim.
Which we will get to that after the
yes.
point. That's okay. very much something we want to discuss. But
you admit it's an assumption.
Oh, certainly.
Yeah,
okay.
I think, I don't know, before we go ahead, I'll go into our assumptions later. We'll finish getting through this, and then we'll go into our assumptions. Okay.
We agree it's immaterial, all of that.
Yeah. That's something we agree on. Oh, my. Well, that's better. Sorry, my internet dropped out. I was a bit frightened there. Okay. Laws of logic, mathematics, science, and absolute morality are universal. That is, that they apply everywhere. I don't really see it.
Right.
I disagree with
it,
given it. Otherwise, it wouldn't be absolute. It's kind of predefined already by the use of the word absolute. Well, we had absolute truth.
Is Sai still connected?
Yeah, no, I can hear you. I'm just, I don't see where it says it on that page, though. That's all.
Well...
Oh, no, I'm saying universe. I'm not, this is me saying it. That's
earlier
not exactly
in the steps,
says.
Did it say that laws of logic are absolute?
I believe the step said absolute laws of logic, or I don't remember, actually. But
Right. So
I mean,
absolute
if you
laws
think this
of logic
is redundant, the... then just click that you agree with it and we'll go to the next one. That's fine.
Oh, yeah. I'm basically just saying I'd find it weird if someone was to agree.
You're just saying it's redundant. That's fine. Yeah.
Laws of blah, are unchanging.
As far as we are aware, yes.
As far as we're aware, that's what we believe, that they're unchanging. Now, here's where
again,
we get...
Again, that's an assumption, though.
It is.
Yeah, blind.
Yeah.
we'll get to.
Right.
we will get to it. So to reach this page, you had to acknowledge that immaterial, universal, unchanging laws of logic, mathematics, science, and absolute morality exist. Universal, immaterial, unchanging laws are necessary for rational thinking to be possible. Universal, immaterial, and unchanging laws cannot be accounted for if the universe was random or only material in nature. And then it goes on to, the Bible teaches that there are two types of people in this world, those who profess the truth of God's existence and those who suppress the truth of God's existence. And we know the rest. Maybe, Sai, you want to read off the quote that you've got on there?
From Romans 1, sure. The wrath of God is being revealed from heaven against all the godlessness and wickedness of men who suppress the truth by their wickedness, since what may be known about God is plain to them, because God has made it plain to them. For since the creation of the world, God's invisible qualities, his eternal power and divine nature have been clearly seen, being understood from what has been made, so that men are without excuse. For although they knew God, they neither glorified him as God nor gave thanks to him, but their thinking became futile, and their foolish hearts were darkened.
That's poetic.
It's biblical. Romans 1, 18 to 21.
Okay, cool. And then we go down a little bit. Step 8, the proof that God exists. And the proof that God exists is that without him, you couldn't prove anything.
Right.
Now, your position is presuppositionalist?
That's correct.
Okay. Which basically... Actually, I'm not going to say it. You'll probably word it better than me since it's your position. So if you want to sort of give a rough, easy-to-understand, bite-sized definition of your presuppositionalist.
Well, I'll tell you the main difference between the camps. I mean, there's a number of different camps in biblical apologetics, but one of them is evidential, which argues with the unbeliever over the evidences. And the presuppositionalist argues with the unbeliever about the reasoning that they take to the evidence. Because we all get the same evidence, and we're going to interpret it subject to what we already believe. So what we already believe, that's what the presuppositionalist examines. Those things that we already believe. Because, for instance, I could prove the resurrection to you, and you could say, wow, that body came back to life. Strange things happen in this world. You know, but you didn't prove he's God. Call Ripley's believe it or not. You know, and because you're going to interpret it subject to your presupposition that there is no God or that you don't believe in God. Whereas somebody who believes in God is going to see evidence for the resurrection and say, hey, well, this is further evidence to bolster my belief that God exists. So what we do is rather than examine the evidence, because we all get the same evidence, I mean, some people will skew it for whatever reasons, but we all get the same evidence. So I'm saying it's senseless to make an argument over the evidences.
Okay. Although I do feel that it's rational given the laws of logic.
Right, but that's not a given without God. That's the point.
We'll get into that.
That hasn't really been demonstrated, though.
Well, we'll get into that.
Okay. Here's the one thing I do feel, and I don't know if you have any way of sort of going into this more, apart from the fact that you say you are a Christian.
Right.
After you go through all the steps, you then go to the Bible. To me, that feels somewhat of a non sequitur, in the sense that even if we take for assumption the end answer is a God, what is it that makes you know that it's the biblical God? What would your answer be to that question?
Okay. Yeah, that's actually a really good point. And I know some people complain about that biblical verse. They say it's not part of the proof. But the point is, none of those steps are part of the proof. You know, I could have this URL, proofthatgodexists.org, go right to this page. The proof that God exists is that without him, you can't prove anything. The reason I include those other steps is just for explanatory purposes. They're not part of the proof. The proof is that without God, you can't prove anything. And people can complain about the earlier steps, but this way, when they reflect on this point, they'll have something to reflect back on to understand why I'm saying this. But those things are actually not material to the proof itself. The proof is this statement right here.
Okay.
So what you're saying is you have an argument with the conclusion only?
No, I'm saying that the proof that God exists, that without that is the logical proof. And now I know that a lot of people say, well, how do you know it's the God of Christianity? But that's a misunderstanding of the presuppositional position, because God is not the conclusion. What I'm saying is the proof that the God of Christianity exists is that without him, you can't prove anything. The God of Christianity is a necessary presupposition to make sense of anything, to make sense of this discussion we're having. And like I say, when we get off the site, we can get into that a little bit deeper. But that's what I'm saying. God is not the conclusion, because if you conclude that the God of Christianity exists, then the unbeliever could easily say, well, I didn't need God to get there. I used my own autonomous reason to get to the point that a God exists, and now I'm going to use my own autonomous reasoning to get to the point that it's the Christian God. I'm saying, no, you cannot reason autonomously. That the fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge. All the treasures of wisdom and knowledge are hidden in Christ. So when the unbeliever reasons, they're actually borrowing from the God that they know exists. Because like I tell people, God does not send people to hell for denying what they don't know, but for their sin against the God that they do know.
And just to make clear to anyone else who'd be listening to the recording, I mean, Andy and myself identify as atheist. I mean, we say we do not have any belief in God. You would say that it's just through a suppression of belief, something that we do know.
That's right.
So would you say that we are being disingenuous to ourselves, given your position, or
I think the technical term is self-deception, and self-deception is a real phenomenon. So I think that you are self-deceived, but it's a culpable self-deception, because when you stand about in front of God, you're not going to be able to say, well, I just didn't know. Because the thing is, you evidence your pre-commitment to God. Even in going through this website, when you admit things like absolute truth and laws of logic, you evidence your pre-commitment to God, but you deny the God that makes those things possible.
Okay, I think, is there anything else website-related you wanted to sort of hit, Andy? Or are we ready to sort of take everything we've gone through and start getting into general conversation on this?
Yeah, my mind's buzzing, so I say we keep going to the conversation after, because there's a lot of things that are bouncing around my head right now.
Do you want to throw some of them at?
Sure. Okay. So,
well, how about if I start with that? Because I'm just curious. You call yourself skeptics.
Mm-hmm.
And your website is Skeptivists, is that right?
Yes.
Yes.
Skeptical Activists. It's,
you know, okay, so you don't say that there is no God, right?
No, we don't actively make a claim that says that there is no God or that there can't be a God.
Right.
We simply see no reason to think that there is.
So you would not say that it's impossible for God to exist?
Certainly not.
Definitely not.
Okay. So while the Christian God reveals things to us such that we can know them for certain, that is the God that you say is not impossible, correct?
Well, we're saying that such a being, if you posit a being, you say, could a being that is all-powerful, all-knowing, reveal things to us in such a way that we could know?
Well, actually, I'm sorry, let me interrupt. I'm not saying that right now. You're saying it's not impossible for God to exist, and I'm telling you what this God does.
Okay, right, okay. Sorry, I'm jumping ahead a bit.
Yeah, that's no problem. And so I'm just saying that this God reveals things to us such that we can know them for certain. That is the God that you're not denying. Because if you're denying a God who can't do that, then you're denying something other than the God of Christianity. But you're saying that it's not impossible for the God of Christianity to exist, and that's what he does.
Maybe we should clarify a little bit, and this could get down to more biblical stuff, which is not necessarily the point we're going to get at, but this might just be beneficial for just explanation. Our position is that we cannot say for certain that just a God could not exist, because just on its own terms, just a God is, there's not much of a definition to it. I can't really reject it because I don't have any definition of what it is. However, with regards to specifically the biblical God, from my understanding of certain things in the Bible, it seems contradictory within the biblical text. And I would say, from a logical, you know, self-contradiction point of view, I am actually more convinced that that version or idea of a God cannot exist. But you could say that's based on my subjective interpretation of the Bible. And since that's not the route we're really going down,
Well, as skeptics, you would have to make a certain claim.
What do you mean?
Well, you'd have to say it's certain that that God can't exist, and you're free to do that, and I'll challenge you on that. But that's my question. Is it impossible for the God of Christianity to exist? If you want to say yes, then I'm going to ask you to justify that. I want to know how you know it's impossible. However, if you say no, it's not impossible, then we can just continue.
I say we just assume for the moment that...
Well, I want to know your position. It's no use, no sense really discussing hypotheticals.
Okay, fine. I haven't exactly documented down, because it's kind of hard to think off the top of your head sometimes, as I'm sure you know, exactly your justifications for certain reasons.
Well, you can define what a skeptic believes then, and then, you know, that might...
A skeptic is more or less a negative position, in that the way skepticism works is you analyze and look at what you know is around you. You observe stuff to take in input, and based on this input, this evidence, you try to figure out if something is true or not true.
So what are you exactly skeptical about?
Any claim that's not justified.
Okay, so if I were to ask you how you know your reasoning is valid, would you be skeptical about your own reasoning if you can't justify it?
You want to take that, Dan?
Okay, so I think this is where I'm going to close the website, because I think we're getting into the conversation part of things. I think we'll go into this. So, yeah, should we be skeptical of our own reasoning? Now, from a perspective of what we could know absolutely, there's no way of, you know, saying there's no room for error here, I would say we cannot know 100% certain that our reasoning is valid. Having said that, I would say that is true for anybody. Because what would you have to do? You would probably have to account for the laws of logic, because that's what I use laws of logic for my reasoning. So if I'm doing that, I would have to account for the laws of logic. Would you say that is true, Sai?
Well, I'd say you have to, but I mean, we're not even getting that far yet. We're just talking about our reasoning. And when you say, for instance, that you cannot know that your reasoning is valid, that's where you have to stop. Because when you say, well, I'd have to say that about everybody, You're trusting your reasoning that you say you cannot validate. So you have to say, well, I can't know anything. Because I've had a lot of people say, well, I can't know anything, but either can you. Say, man, if you can't know anything, how can you know what I can know?
The problem, though, is that our justification for, and I know you don't like the word, assuming our reasoning is valid, is out of necessity. If we didn't, we wouldn't be able to do anything.
But how do you know your reasoning about that is valid?
Well, it's an assumption.
Right. So it's a blind faith claim.
In a way, yes.
Okay, so you live on blind faith.
It depends on how many... I think with any situation, if you peel enough layers back, you will reach a point of something is just the way it is. Or it just appears to be a certain way, and we can't really say it's any other way.
And this might help the conversation then. Could you be wrong about everything you claim to know?
Not everything.
Okay, what do you know for absolute certain, and how do you know it?
I am thinking.
Okay, how do you know you exist?
Well, because I'm thinking, but that wasn't what I said. I said, I know I'm thinking.
Yeah,
which does lead me to understand that I exist, because if I didn't exist, I wouldn't be thinking.
Well, that's Descartes' syllogism. And it was an atheistic philosopher that pointed out that was begging the question. And I'm sure you've heard my debates, but I could lay out the first premise is, I'm thinking. The second premise is, in order to think, I must exist. And the conclusion is, therefore, I exist. But the problem is, the conclusion, I exist, is assumed in the first premise when you say, I'm thinking. In order to not beg the question, the syllogism should be, there is thinking going on. And you can't get from there's thinking going on to I exist.
Okay, so if there's thinking going on, then something exists, right?
Well, that's up for you. I'm asking you what you know for certain.
Sure, but if something exists, how can I identify myself, I guess?
You can't.
Or anything else. If what?
You can't apart from God. That's the point. Okay, but you know, I could even grant, for the sake of argument, that you can know you exist. What else do you know?
For absolute, just completely absolute knowledge, 100%, I know this.
What do you know at all?
Reality. What do I know at all?
That you cannot be wrong about, other than your existence.
So what do I absolutely know?
Right.
So in order to rephrase, what do I know that is completely congruous with the absolute truth of reality?
Well, no. I mean, the thing is, what do you know to be true,
right?
Which cannot be false.
Right. So simply that I exist, like I said. That's the only thing I claim to know, absolutely.
Okay, and you don't know anything beyond that, so you could be wrong about everything.
Not absolutely, no. But here's the thing, and you, of course, disagree, but neither do you.
Well, okay, but the thing is, all you can know, I mean, I'm just granting for the sake of argument that you can know you exist, but you can't know anything about me.
Okay, justify why you are not in the same position, though.
Well, because you have already granted that it's not impossible for the Christian God to exist.
Sure, it's not impossible,
right.
But does it exist?
No, but the thing is, you've granted me a possible avenue to certainty, whereas you have none.
But just because an avenue to certainty is possible, that does not mean you can therefore say it has happened or that avenue is realized. Well, I could
the problem is, Daniel, the problem is that you can't know that.
Okay, this is based on logic, which again...
Well, again, if you can only know that you exist, how do you know anything else?
See, here's the problem. You are trying to claim some sort of high ground of knowledge because of your personal revelation, right?
Okay, but that Andy, is a knowledge claim. And you have just stated that you could only know that you exist.
Yes, I know things tentatively. I'm not denying that fact.
Well, what is tentative knowledge?
Tentative knowledge is something that, based on all evidence, on all whatever, you assume that this thing is absolutely true. You assume it.
You're saying that tentative knowledge is knowledge of something that is true, which could in fact be false.
Theoretically, anything could be false.
Okay,
but
therefore, you have no basis for knowledge.
Or for the presupposition of God
as well. But again, it applies to you.
Pardon me?
It applies to you, though, the same exact problem.
How do you know that?
How do you know that we don't?
Well, as I said, you both have conceded that it's not impossible for the Christian God to exist. I know it because God has revealed things to me such that I can know them for certain. That's how I can know it.
And how do you know that?
Because God has revealed it. And what I'm saying, too, by the way...
Hang on,
let me finish. I'm going to finish. What I was going to say is that he's also revealed his existence to you, such that you can know him for certain. Such that you do know him for certain. That's why you're going to be without excuse when you stand before him.
Right. But for anyone who's listening to this, that would sound just like a claim. How do you justify that claim? How do you justify that he's revealed this? How has he done
it? Well, I don't need to, because you've already conceded the possibility.
But possibility does not equal actuality.
I grant that. However, of the two of us, I have given an epistemology. You have not.
So? That's the point.
I have no problem with that. I have no problem with that. But then debates presuppose knowledge. And you have not given me a justification for knowing anything. So when we debate, when we talk about these things, we're borrowing from my worldview. And that's exactly what Scripture says, that you're suppressing the truth and unrighteousness. I'm not saying that unbelievers don't know things, but they can't justify anything they claim to know, because the fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge.
Okay, so if we know things, but we can't justify them, if right. I was to come up with a rebuttal or a point, if I was to get to argue with someone else about something completely different...
Right.
And I came up with an argument that disproves something to them, and it turns out it was true. Just because I can't justify why my reasoning is valid, does that make my reasoning invalid?
No, That's a very good point. That's just like somebody saying to me, you know, I don't know how my car works. Doesn't mean I can't drive a car. The problem is that you have a worldview where cars don't make sense. Because, for instance, knowledge assumes truth, assumes logic, assumes rationality. None of those can be made sense of without God. And we could get into that because we did touch on a little bit earlier that one of the things that assumed is truth. And I would say to you, what is truth without God?
Well, our definition of truth, you know, like existence or reality of the universe is the way it is.
Right. So yeah, if you have a correspondence theory of truth. And you say truth is that which corresponds to reality. But the problem with that is without revelation from God, how do you know what's real?
Well, we're saying you can't know 100%. All we have is educated guess.
That's right. So you cannot justify truth.
Although guess might carry too much baggage in the word, but we'll use it. I'm going to assume listeners to this will be intelligible enough to understand what I'm saying.
Right. But you can't justify truth or logic or knowledge. You can't justify any of them. So this conversation assumes my worldview. And that's
okay. I'd like to bring this to a question of, if you could pin down specifically what it is that, word for word, what's the specific point of our worldview that just doesn't cut it for you? What's the specific problem with our worldview, just so we're clear?
That you cannot justify anything you claim to know.
Why?
Because you don't start with the God of Scripture.
Why should you start with the God of Scripture?
Well, I mean, you could see from the discussion we've had for the last 5-10 minutes or so, when I've asked you to justify your knowledge claim, it's clear that you can't.
But I'm asking you how you justify it.
Pardon me?
But I'm asking you about your justification.
That's correct. Now, you have to keep in mind, though, when we have this conversation and you're asking me for my justification, then you're going to interpret that, my answer, according to what you claim to know, according to truth, according to logic, which you borrow from my worldview. So this is a discussion I'm happy to have with Christians, because we can account for truth and knowledge. Now, I can give you my justification, but you have no basis from which to oppose it, to argue against it, because you can't justify knowledge. I say that I know things based by and through revelation from God.
Okay. I think maybe then the point we need to kind of work on is what... Let's see if I can work this. What is it? How are you justifying for how you can reason?
I just did. God reveals things to us such that we can know them for certain, such we do know them for certain.
Right. How do you justify or know that that is true, apart from it being a claim?
Well, because God reveals it such that I'm certain of it, such that you're certain of it too.
Now, isn't that, if we were to do something like that, isn't that where you would, from what I've heard in previous debates, use the term vicious circularity?
Right. Well, you've granted that it's not impossible for God to exist. So that's what gets us out of the circle. It's a virtuous circle. God reveals. That's how
we think. What can I? Let's get down to some definitions. What's the difference between virtuous circularity and vicious circularity?
Virtuous circularity, it redeems rationality. Vicious circularity destroys it. Because you must say, I reason that my reasoning is valid. And I say, I can know my reasoning is valid because God has revealed it to me such that I can know it. That's the difference. And you've granted that possibility.
Only. So, I have a point. And I know in other discussions you've said in response. So my point would, of course, bring up false revelation. You would say that just because there's false revelation doesn't mean there can't be true revelation, right?
That's right. That would be a hasty generalization. You're correct.
Okay. But the point is that because there can be false revelation, how do we know that yours isn't?
You can't know anything.
So then if we can't know it,
according to your worldview,
how is your position justified?
According to your worldview, you can't know anything. But you know that God exists. I know that God exists the same way that you do.
Except I'd claim that we don't.
That's right. That's right. But the claim has nothing to do with it.
But the thing, though, is like you were very adamant that you've had this revelation, right?
I'm saying you've had it too.
How come I don't know, for lack of a better term, that I've had this
revelation? Well, I'm saying you do know, but you're suppressing the truth for whatever reason. But the thing is, the very first sin in the Garden of Eden was autonomy. That Satan said, if you eat of this fruit, you shall be as God. And Eve made up her own mind because God said, don't eat of the fruit. Satan said, eat of the fruit. And Eve made up her own mind. So she suppressed what she knew to be true, that God was the authority. And that's the same sin that we're committing today, that we're denying the authority of God and we're making our own mind up. That we're saying, no, I'm the one who's the arbiter of truth. But then when you start peeling away the layers, you can see that, no, you can't even justify truth without God.
So if you are dependent on God, basically it comes back to a point where we say, look, it just is the way it is, like reality or logic just is the way it is. You would find that as a non-acceptable answer.
Well, the problem is that somebody who has a different view of reality could say exactly the same thing, and you have no way of differentiating the two. Because if you say truth is that which corresponds to reality, I say, well, how do you know it's real? There are people who say all is one, Hindus. There are weird worldviews that say all is water. How do you know that they're not right?
I think it comes down to the fact that we all share, everyone in this earth, for the most part, apart from people like severe brain deficiencies who have had, you know, like big blow to the head and they have the actual brain damage, we all seem to experience this reality.
Well, you brought up a very good point there. You brought up a very good point that there are people in this world whose brains do not work properly, whose brains do not allow them to reach logical conclusions. Would that be a fair statement?
I don't see any objection to that. I don't know about Andy.
Oh. No, that's good.
Okay, then how do you know you're not one of those people?
That would be through mutual agreement and logic and reasoning.
Right, but if you're one of those people, you couldn't know it because you wouldn't be reasoning logically. And that's the point.
So how do you know you're not one of those people?
Through revelation from God.
And I know I'm going to keep sort of pinning this on you every now and then as well. And this is more to sort of try and, either from this, I would like to sort of come to a conclusion, say, okay, Sai's making the same sort of type of assumptions somewhere as I am, but maybe different ones.
You can't know that. That's the point.
Or you'll end up explaining it in a way to me that would make sense. I mean,
but you have no basis for that claim. That's my point. You can say whatever you want, and I'll say, how do you know that? You have no basis for any claim against my worldview.
So, Sai, just a minute ago, you said to Daniel, how do you know you're not one of those faulty, you know, thinking people, perhaps either you're insane or you have brain damage, whatever. You asked that, right?
Correct.
And he asked it right back. And you said, because God has told me. Right. But here's the problem. There very well could exist somebody who has brain damage or mental illness or something who's experiencing exactly what you're experiencing.
How do you know that?
Okay. Do you understand that point? Whether that we can, me or Andy, whether
we can
absolutely know that?
No, because they can't be experiencing the same thing I'm experiencing because I'm experiencing certainty.
Can they believe they're experiencing the same thing you're experiencing?
Sure, people can be wrong, but that does not affect my claim.
It does.
It kind of does. Because
you could be wrong.
How do you know that?
How do you know you can't be wrong?
Because you just conceded that people can be wrong. Yeah, so therefore, you can be wrong.
Okay, maybe I'll go for this. I am infallible. Andy, you say you're infallible. Sorry, shit. Slip the tongue. And also fallible? A second one. We're fallible.
Right.
Sai Tembruke, are you fallible?
Absolutely.
But you'd claim there's a certain part where you're not fallible.
I'm saying that God reveals things to us such that we can know them for certain. And that's why my very first question was, is it impossible for God to exist?
Okay, so this comes down to, I know because God told me so.
That's right. Well, he's told you too.
Right, I don't accept that.
Well, that's fine. You don't have to accept that. However, if you die in your sin, if you die unrepentant, then there's a penalty for that. There's a penalty for poaching on crown land. I mean, you could say, I can go around and I can shoot these deer all day long. I can clean them. I can eat them. But, you know, somebody owns that land, and there is going to be an accounting.
Did you just throw out Pascal's wager?
Did I? No, I didn't. I can't
feel like
stand
you did. You're like, you know, you can do whatever you want, but you're going to go burn in hell.
Pascal's wager
so
deals in probabilities.
Therefore, go burn in hell.
No, Pascal's wager deals in probabilities. I'm just telling you what's the consequence of denying the God you know exists. Pascal's wager
that
says, you know.
Pascal's
Pascal's wager says, if I'm wrong, then I die, rot in the ground, worms eat my body. But if I'm right, I get to go to heaven. If you're wrong, you die, rot in the ground, worms eat your body. But if you're right, you know, or if you're right, you die, rot in the ground, worms eat your body. But if you're wrong, you go to hell. That's not what I'm saying. I'm saying you are wrong, you're poaching on crown land, and there's going to be an accountability. That's not Pascal's wager. That's telling you what is the consequences of your behavior.
So you're declaring you're right, but you haven't justified it, though.
Well, how do you know?
Well, you haven't justified it to anyone other than yourself.
Well, the thing is, you are making a knowledge claim. How do you know that?
Because I don't believe it.
But because you don't believe it is irrelevant to my claim. It has nothing to do with my claim.
Well, if you justified it to me, I'll believe it.
It's everything to do with your claim. But
you can't justify a claim to somebody who can't know anything.
But you just said we can know stuff. You said we know God exists.
But you can't know it according to your worldview. That's the point.
But you're saying this somehow overrides our worldviews. There's certain things we can know anyway, and you'd have to concede.
Right. But the thing is, you cannot know something for certain which is contrary to the truth.
So here's the problem, then. It seems to boil down. You tell us that we can know because of God, right?
I'm saying that you do know things for certain.
Right, fine. We do know because of God things. And it's a bit semantical to kind of switch that around. But the point is, you're saying that it is possible for all of us to know things, that we do know things.
That's right, but not according to your worldview.
The issue, though, is that you are assuming this worldview that God exists to justify something that we can know without first justifying that God exists.
Well, you both conceded that possibility, so that's irrelevant.
But we've already said the possibility is not actuality.
It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter.
It does. It completely matters.
How do you know that, Andy?
Again, you're using no as this absolute, right?
Well,
saying, how do I know?
I mean, that's what we get
I know
back to the very
because
first question.
I can observe and deduce. That's how I know.
Okay, so you're using your observations and your deductions. So you're using your senses and your reasoning. How do you know your senses and reasoning are valid?
Because they are consistent.
How do you know they're consistent? You're using your reasoning to determine whether or not they're consistent. And that's
but not only his reasoning.
It's defined as something
using
happening the same way over and over again, and that's how it happens. Therefore,
right.
It's consistent. Definitionally,
also,
it's true.
Additionally, it's not only Andy's reasoning. I can reason, and
right.
Thousands of other people can also reason, and jointly we can all bounce our reasoning off each other and reach the same conclusion, all from independent minds, all reaching one same conclusion.
Are you employing your reasoning when you determine what other minds are telling you?
We're always employing reasoning no matter what.
That's right. And how do you justify the validity of your reasoning?
Because
consistency with
reasoning.
Our observations.
So you're using your reason to justify your reasoning?
Well, no. We use logical absolutes.
Yeah. Are you using your reasoning when you use logical absolutes?
Of course.
Okay. So you're using your reasoning to justify your reasoning.
by using that type of formulation, are you not using the fact that, you know, God revealed something to me, which is justification for God revealed something to me, which is justification for
God
revealed?
That's right. I don't deny the circle. However, you have conceded that possibility, and I'm saying that yours is a vicious circle, which is impossible. Because you're
saying, why is ours vicious and yours isn't?
Actually, we haven't conceded that our position
okay,
is impossible.
Okay, well, let me ask you that question.
I concede, just before I go ahead, I concede your position is possible, but I also concede our position is possible.
Okay, so let me get this on record then. Are you saying it's not viciously circular to justify your reasoning with your reasoning?
Everything will ultimately come back down to a point that we just have to assume. I mean, if you parody the question why enough times, you will get back to a point where something just is the way it is. And our reasoning is based off of making observations from these things that we just cannot work any further back on. There are limitations to how many layers we can peel back.
Okay, let me get back to the question. Is it viciously circular to use your reasoning to justify your reasoning?
I would say circular.
How do you escape the vicious circle?
How do you?
Revelation from God.
Which is, but how do you know that? And again,
well, the thing is, that is how I escape it. You can disagree with it. I want to know how you escape it.
Okay, what's the definition of being able to escape it? To define what it takes to escape the vicious circle?
Well, you have just conceded that according to my worldview, I can know things for certain based on revelation from God. It's not impossible for God to exist. Whether or not that's the case or not, we can put aside for now. Now we're asking you whether it's viciously circular to use your reason to justify your reasoning. And how do you escape that circle? Because the thing is, you could be reasoning invalidly and you couldn't know it.
Right, but we share the same form of reasoning.
How do you know that?
Do you say you reason differently from us?
No, I'm saying that you cannot know that. You can make a claim, but you can't know it.
Okay, what if I say irrelevant, we do this to all the viewers or the people listening, and they could say, you know, maybe someone in the listener says they can know. So would you agree that I'm using reasoning in a way that you would use reasoning?
I would say that we all use reasoning based on God, each and every one of us. That's why, see, you know that God exists. That's why you can reason. But when I ask you to justify your reasoning, when I peel it away, it's clear, I hope to everybody listening, that you can't justify your reasoning. That's a vicious circle. And that's what I'm saying. Everybody can reason because we're all created in the image of God. God says in Isaiah 1:18, come, let us reason together. And we're all created in his image.
Right. If we all appear to be reasoning the same way, I mean, from my experience of reality, everyone has the same form, the same way of reasoning. Now, they might do like slight little differences. They might miss key points of information. But in my experience of reality, everyone reasons. So it's pointless for me to think of a reality that's not consistent with the one I'm experiencing. Ultimately, I cannot know. But I'm saying, why do I have to account for it? Why do I have to account for it?
Because you can't know anything. You said ultimately you can't know, and that's the point. And you don't live your life that way.
I do. I live my life from the perspective of this, of the reality I'm experiencing. And in the context of this reality, there are things that I can know and there are things that I can't know.
But how do you know it's the right reality?
Does it matter? This is the one I'm experiencing. So why does it matter?
The thing is, if it's not the right reality, then do you really know anything?
Well, if it's not the right reality, then no. And you don't exist and you don't know anything.
Well, the thing is, you can't say that because you don't know if you're living in the right reality.
If this isn't the right reality, it's conceivable that you don't even exist.
The thing is, you can't justify that. Right. But you can't know anything.
Right. Now, I know we say neither can you, and you seem to say people say that, but what we're trying to demonstrate is that, as far as I'm aware, you, from your position or your opinion, you expose a flaw in an atheistic worldview and show why yours does not have this flaw and that's why you can know things given your worldview. Is that an accurate...
Basically.
Okay, but if we were able to sort of show that, no, the argument you're making against our worldview is apparent in yours as well, that would mean, you know...
Well, you'd have to justify your knowledge claim, which you have yet to do. And I'm happy to leave the floor open for you folks to tell me how you can know anything. Now, I've granted that you can know you exist, which I would actually argue against. But, you know, for the purpose of argument, I'll say, okay, you can know that you exist. How do you know anything else? And Andrew, anyways, has conceded that he doesn't know anything else. But he'll keep making knowledge claims about my view.
Absolutely. That's what I've
different.
Conceived.
Yeah, there's a difference. There's
okay,
a difference.
What? So you're saying that there's a difference between absolute knowledge and knowledge?
Yes.
So you're saying that you can know things to be true which might be false?
In my understanding, I can think something is true and it's not.
No. That's true. I'm not asking think. I'm asking know. That you can know something to be true which might actually be false.
Okay, I know my parents are not black. I can know that. Now, if
let's get back to my question before. Is it possible?
No, I'm answering it.
No. I'm asking, is it possible to know something to be true which might actually be false?
Well, I would say a knowledge claim, and then you tell me then. My knowledge claim was my parents are not black. So would you say that I might not know this?
No, I'm asking you, could you know that if it might be false?
So if it were false, could I know it?
No, is it possible to know that your parents are not black if they might be?
Given our understanding of reality, sure.
Okay, this might be a little bit easier. If I said to you, you're in England, what's the speed limit on the M6? And if you said to me, well, it's 60, I know it to be 60 miles per hour, but I could be wrong. Do you know it?
Sure.
Okay, well, you see, that's a huge difficulty. Because if you say, I know it to be 60, but I could be wrong, you don't know it.
But I'm saying I couldn't be wrong on that.
That's not the question.
So the question knowledge, I think the contention here is the definition of knowledge, right? All right?
Justified knowledge, true belief.
See, that's not our definition.
Well, if you define knowledge as turnip.
Because justified true belief is absolute knowledge.
Okay, what is knowledge to you then?
Knowledge is what we think to be true. Is the information we have.
That's belief.
It's information.
Okay, can I know that God exists?
Knowledge informs your beliefs.
Can I know that God exists?
We don't think so.
Why not?
Not unless...
If it's just what I believe, if knowledge is just an arbitrary belief.
Right, but knowledge can be wrong. That's the point.
So you can know things which are false.
Right.
Sure.
You can know things to be true which are false.
Sure.
Okay, well, I think...
You can know things that you can know things that you think are true.
Right, but you can't know things to be true, which are actually false.
If you know something is true and the property of this thing you know is true, then it's not false because obviously that's a logical contradiction.
Right, but you can't know something to be true which is actually false. I think we're just going around in circles here, guys. We've demonstrated clearly that other than your own existence, you cannot know anything.
Not absolutely. No.
Well, if you want, okay, tell me what you know then, other than your own existence.
Non-absolutely.
Non-absolutely. Like, just give me a knowledge claim then.
Okay, I have 5 fingers in my left hand.
Okay, how do you know that?
Because I can see it. I can count it.
How do you know that your vision and your reasoning about what you see is accurate?
I don't, but that's not the problem.
Okay, so you don't know that that's accurate. You don't know your reasoning is accurate. So do you actually know it then?
We contend that neither do you.
Okay, okay, so we've done a demonstration on our end, so will you allow us the courtesy to extend the questions to you and sort of show what we think from
your instance? I think in that demonstration, I've clearly demonstrated that you cannot know that. So if you want to ask me to demonstrate something, I'm going to do that based on what just happened here, that you can't know anything. So you can go ahead if you like.
Well, it doesn't matter that I can't know anything absolutely. If I can't know anything absolutely, does that mean everything I think is actually false? I mean, what I think or what I believe has no, or at least you would agree, I'm sure, my beliefs do not change the reality of things. So I could believe something to be true, and I might not be able to prove it 100%, but that doesn't mean it cannot be true.
I agree with that.
Okay, right. So I would bear that in mind rather than when we ask a question of trying. It feels like you're almost deterring it to, well, you can't know anything, rather than not answering the actual question.
No, that's what I'm saying. You can't know anything. That has nothing to do with your earlier statement. According to your worldview, you can't know anything. And we're defining Absolutely. Knowledge differently. You're saying, for you, knowledge
but
is a
belief. We can know things given the context of this reality.
Okay, let me ask you this question. Can you know anything for certain other than the fact that you exist?
Within the context of this reality or absent?
No. The thing is, certainty would have to do, with Well, then, that would be the question. Then what is truth? Truth is you saying whatever corresponds to what you believe. Well, that's
no, not no, no. Truth. Truth is what corresponds to reality.
Yeah, but how do you know which is the right reality?
That's not the point. Truth is what corresponds to reality. It doesn't matter what we perceive as reality. The point is that truth is what
represents. Okay, and I have no problem with that. I would actually say that that's not exactly the definition that I would use, but I would concede that definition. Now my question is, how do you know what's real?
Again, we don't absolutely.
That's right. So you can't know what's true.
Not absolutely, no.
You can't know what's true at all. Okay.
Now well, not the reality. Okay, but, hang on. But a second. We're having this conversation with you subject to the experience of this reality. So within the context of this reality, we can know things. And we're asking you from the conversation. Well, we're going at it from, you know, we assume this reality. This is our presupposition. Right. And if we assume this reality, then we can know things.
What is an assumption again?
Well, you make an assumption. You assume God.
What I'm saying that God has revealed things such that we can know for certain. But what is an assumption? You're saying that you're assuming this reality is real. It's the right one. And that's something accepted without proof or evidence. And you're living on blind faith.
Right. But now, okay. For some reason, when we say, so do you, right? You just say, the fact that you claim that you know stuff does not escape you from this. You're just saying, wait, hang on. But how do you know that your reasoning to us is valid?
Because God has revealed...
Right. But you God keep claiming this, but you cannot demonstrate this in any way.
How do you know that?
How do you justify?
Because you haven't.
Because you're dodging the question is one thing that
how
I
do you
find.
Know that?
it's so apparent to anyone that would be listening to this.
You have already conceded that we can know things because you and your understanding think we can know things, right?
But not based on your worldview.
Doesn't matter. The point is you think we can know. Therefore,
okay,
show us.
So are you saying that you know things according to my worldview? That's how you can refute my worldview?
That's your understanding.
Yeah, okay, that's right. So your understanding of that you can't know anything to be true according to your worldview. You can't know what truth is because you can't know you have the right reality. So you can't know what's true. So you have no basis for objecting to my worldview. You can't say, Sai, it's true that you didn't do this because you don't know what truth is.
How do you know that?
Based by and through revelation from God.
And how do you know that?
Because he's revealed it such that I can be certain of it.
Vicious circularity.
Infinitely regress, though, that's the point.
No, how do you know
that? You are infinitely regressing, because each time you say, how do you know that? Why do you know that? We can say, why do you know that? And it just keeps going back.
I think we're
going
to wrap this up pretty soon, because this is normally how it gets bogged down. Let's get back to the opening thing. Is it impossible for God to exist?
No.
Which God?
The God of Christianity.
Andy, I don't know. How do you feel about this one? This
Andy already said no, it's not impossible. I'm waiting for your answer, Dan.
Okay. I would need more time to think about it, but for the sake of argument, at least, let's say not impossible.
Okay, that's fine. Well, that's my claim.
It's not. But it feels that you're making a non sequitur. It's not impossible, therefore it is.
No, I'm saying it's not impossible. Therefore, I have given you my epistemology, revelation from that God, and your claim is impossible, as you've admitted that you can't know anything to be true, because you can't know if you are in the right reality. When you say truth is that which corresponds to reality, I ask you, how do you know it's real? And you say, I don't. So of the two of us, I have a justification for truth, and you don't, whether you agree with mine or not.
Well, you have an assertion. That's not a justification.
How do you know that?
Okay, I see. It's
killing me, honestly.
Does it matter?
It absolutely does matter. Because when you say something, you assume that it's true, and you have no basis for truth without God. And that's why the two of you...
But you do, apparently.
That's right. And that's why the two of you need to
repent. So why don't you take my question from your perspective of knowing? Even if I don't know the stuff I'm saying, take it from your position where you do know and actually consider it still and give us, you know, enlighten us.
Well, the question is irrelevant from my worldview.
Because you've made an assumption, which you claim
because God has revealed things such that we can know them for certain. And like I say, and that's the claim that both of you know this God as well, and that's why you need to beg for repentance for your sin against him.
See, the thing is, if it comes from God, and I think maybe this will be like one of my final sort of points before we get into wrapping things up, is if it's coming back to it comes from revelation from God, I mean, I would then say, well, how do you account for God? How do you account for God's existence?
Yeah, you can say that. That's fine. But any answer I give, you're going to interpret subject to my worldview. Because I'm saying I don't need to account for God. He's always existed.
You don't need to account for God.
No, he's always existed.
Then why do we need to account for reality?
Why? Because the thing is, you can't tell me whether you have the right reality or not. That's why you need to account for it.
No, but this is the reality. I say this is the right reality. Because we're experiencing it.
How do you know your experiences are valid?
Because I'm experiencing it.
Okay.
But vicious circularity, right. Sure. But that's right. The same vicious circularity you use with divine revelation.
No, because you have conceded.
Hang on. It's the same thing that's coming from a vicious circularity from your God, which is completely unaccounted for.
No, look, you've conceded my position.
No, we haven't. We've conceded the possibility.
That's right.
Which is not the same.
But you're conceding that my position is possible.
You've conceded that
just as ours is completely possible.
Okay, well, give it again.
Now that we've said that, we have to move forward and show one way or the other.
Because your position is impossible. Because you do not know that you're in the right reality. Your view is because
we don't know doesn't mean that there can't be a God.
Your view is that we'll finish this up now. Truth is that which corresponds to reality, and you've both admitted that you can't know what's real, therefore you can't know what's true.
Can I just make a sort of analogy to sort of show why I feel this is wrong? Let's, for sake of from our position, assume we can know this reality, okay? Now, I do not know that Africa exists as a country, right? I do not know that Africa exists. The same young, I have no knowledge of this. But because I don't know it, does that mean it's impossible for it to exist?
It's impossible for you to know it.
It's impossible to know it, but it doesn't mean it's impossible for it to exist.
No, of course not.
But right, that's not now the claim. We're saying we concede the fact that it's possible for your worldview to exist or to be accurate. It's possible for ours to be. But you're sort of saying because yours is possible, therefore yours is right. And we're saying, no, you haven't justified that.
No, what I'm saying, my claim is the fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge. That unless you start with God, you cannot know anything. And what I've exposed in this hour and a half now just about is that you cannot know anything unless you start with God. You're just talking about arbitrary opinion. And in Proverbs, it says, you know, the fool delights in expressing his own opinion. And that, you know, it says, the fool says in his heart there is no God. But they're not interested in knowledge or truth. They can't justify knowledge and truth, just interested in airing their opinion. And basically, that's all you're doing is you're airing your opinion.
I think you would have to say the same, because again, you cannot account for God.
How do you know that?
How do you know? But, you know. We can both play the how do you know game.
Is it true that I can't account for God?
No.
Okay, fine. That's good. Then I can. Is it true that I cannot account for God? That I can't?
I don't know.
Theoretically, you could, but you haven't.
How do you know that? Is it true that I haven't?
Is
it true that I haven't?
Yes.
Okay, now, how do you know anything to be true? You say truth is that which corresponds to reality. How do you know you're living in the right reality?
Well, it doesn't matter because we're talking from the context of this reality.
Right, it's pointless. The thing is, you could be wrong about the reality, correct?
Yes, but that's not what we're talking about.
If you could be wrong about the reality, then you can't say that what I'm saying is not true.
It's like if some people were in a matrix system and people were arguing about the mechanics of how things work within that matrix system. And some people say, well, how do you know that, you know, this matrix system is, you know, there's not something outside of this? Well, it doesn't matter because they're talking about stuff within that reality, whether it's true or not. We're having this conversation with you about, you know, this reality that we experience. Even if this isn't true.
Is it true that you're having this conversation?
Well, everyone's going to assume so because people are going to be listening to the recording, listen to this stuff, and it's going to be pretty difficult to argue otherwise, at least from the experience of this reality.
Is it true that everyone's going to assume that?
Well, we can't read people's minds, so who knows?
So every one of your truth claims, I challenge, and you cannot back them up. And that's my point.
fair
we
enough.
We cannot live that way. And the thing is,
but
these type
we do challenge yours.
But these type of discussions, you have to keep in mind, these type of discussions only happen on Skype, only happen, you know, on the internet. But when you're out in the world, you don't think that way. You think and you live according to the world that you know that God exists. You assume things, you know things to be true. You know that when you drink water, it's not going to kill you today because you know that the properties are going to be the same today as they were yesterday. You think thoughts, you speak words because you believe in the uniformity of nature and you have no justification for that outside of God. Because you guys are thinking thoughts in your head. You're about to utter sounds to me. You're about to utter a response. But I could simply ask, how do you know that those words you're about to say mean the same thing they did 5 seconds ago? And you have no justification for that other than a vicious circle.
I think that's the fallacy here is you're saying because we do not know it, therefore it must be wrong.
No, that's not what I'm saying. I'm saying you can't justify it.
Okay, but does that mean it's not true?
Well, I'm saying it's true that you cannot justify it, and that's
right.
What my worldview says. My right. worldview says that unless you start with God, you can't know anything. That's the only claim I'm making here. Unless you start with God, you can't know anything, and I think that's been abundantly clear in the last hour and 22 minutes.
Right, and I think our position is no one can absolutely know anything anyway, because how do you know that your revelation is not a false one?
Okay, is it true that nobody can absolutely know anything?
Okay, I see what's coming.
It may very well be, though. But whether or not we can know if that's true is the question you're asking.
No, I'm asking, is it true? And your answer has to be,
I think. But the thing is that truth and knowledge are different.
Is that true?
Yes.
Okay, how do you know that?
We don't.
Okay, you're making a truth claim and you say you don't know it. But guys, you know, I would like to be able to keep this on about an hour and 20 minutes because I'd like to be able to put it on... one CD, and if it goes too long, then I'm not going to be able to do that. So
okay, that's sure. Fair enough. How long have you got of this recording before we would have to like completely wrap things up?
I think we're done. It's an hour and 23 minutes right now. Otherwise, I'd speed
minutes.
It up, and then we'd sound like chipmunks.
Okay, I guess we'll just kind of wrap up our points here, and I think ultimately it comes down to Andy and I. We can wrap up first, and we'll give you sort of the last word, Si, and then we'll sort of call it thing there.
Right.
By the way, I have enjoyed the conversation. I do thank you for coming on and taking the time to talk with us on this.
My pleasure.
So, I'm not going to go out of this and oh, that Si was a jerk. And...
Just wrap up, Dan.
Oh, there's not people that do that.
Okay. it feels like yes. We've exposed the fact that ultimately, from an atheistic worldview, we cannot absolutely know anything all, apart from what we would claim is that we're thinking that we exist. But we would say that's true of any worldview. And instead of being able to defend that, the only two things you do say is you come back down to circular reasoning, which is I know because God says so, divinely. I know that because God says so divinely. I know that vicious circularity. Or you dodge the question and just ask, how do you know that? How do you know that? How do you know that? It doesn't matter whether I know that or not. What matters is with that question, works. I'm asking, how do you account for things? And I would give you examples why I couldn't. And all you can do is ask, how do I know that? That's not an answer to the question. So you've not provided a justifiable defense. That's sort of where I see things. Andy, I don't know what you want to say.
I'd say that's pretty much perfect summary. Go ahead and Si.
Yeah, okay. Now I'd like to summarize as well. Now, if people listen to this, listen back just to the summary there. He says that they will admit, according to the atheistic worldview, that they can't know anything other than the fact that they exist. And what I want you to do, I want you to count the knowledge claims that he made after that. He's made claims about my view. He's made, probably at least 5 or 6 knowledge claims in his summary after he said that he can only know that he exists, which I deny anyways. Because you cannot know those things unless you start with God. Scripture says the fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge. And I'm not saying that I'm better than these guys. I'm just better off. Because I've repented of my sins and put my trust in Jesus Christ. And I hope that people will go back over this, listen to the claims that were made, listen to who can actually justify them and who has justified them. And I really appreciate your time, and I urge you to go to proofthatgodexists.org and check out the website. And thanks a lot for your time, guys.
Thank you, Si.
Okay, thank you very much. And say, right. Yes, that's proof, www.proofthatgodexists.org. And for us, it's www.skeptivists.com. And I think that concludes everything. So who knows? Maybe we'll talk again at a later date, Si.
Sounds good. See you later,
all
guys.
Right. Yeah, take care.
Bye.